Homa gyanati varandasya gananjana salakaya chakshu unminitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha bhukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate garib yat kripa tamaham bande shri gunandina taranam nama om vishnu padaya krishna prastaya bhutale shri mate bhakti vidanta swaminiti namine namaste saraswate deve gauravani pacharine nirvishesha shanyavari Pasta chade satarane. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Vanamali Pandit, thank you very much for this opportunity to share some memories with the assembled Vaishnavas today about Sri Srivadha Gopi Vallabha. I would like as much as possible to keep this presentation fixed on them, although certainly I will be reflecting about my own experiences with them. And in fact, I will be reading something that I have written a couple of days ago to stir my memories of a very particular intense time in service to them. And I wanted to share that today as part of my presentation to serve as a well, just to serve as evidence how much Radha Gopi Vallabha was a very integral part, not only of my life, but of the devotees with whom I associated in my very early days when I came to the Boston Temple, first began coming in 1972. I wanted to read that for another reason also, which I will highlight as I read it, to illustrate a very important point which I've experienced in my own devotional life, and I hope other devotees can capture the essence of the mood, is that oftentimes we've thought that service to the deities or the service to the deities that we covet in our heart is intimate service that may be performed by the pujari on the altar, or by a cook who's cooking for them, or having some kind of service of that nature directly in service to the deity. But I wanted to also speak about my own experiences of long before I was even second initiated, how I was, I would have to say, trained, but not only trained, but influenced, I would say, is a much better word. I was influenced by the devotees surrounding me that service to Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha was a service that was accessible to everyone who entered the doors of the temple at any time in their spiritual life. And it was always accessible. And I used to keep, in my early days, I used to think that there was something very mystical in the old Boston Temple on 40 North Beacon Street about the doors that led to the kitchen. Very mystical, because it was a place that was never open to me when I was first visiting the temple. And even when I was living in the temple, it was a place that I wasn't allowed to be in. And there were two places in the temple when I first started coming that had a kind of a mystical attraction to me, and that was the kitchen and what was behind that curtain on the altar, because I was always influenced by the constant discussions of the devotees in those days about what was taking place even when the curtains were closed behind that altar. And I was really led. I see devotees shaking their heads. Is it because there's some difficulty with the sound? I just want to check to make sure that the devotees are able to hear me. Or maybe they're not hearing me. Maybe some devotees are listening for Russian translation. I don't know. But can you hear me? Can somebody please?
Yes,
you can hear
me.
Yes, okay. All right. That's the relevant part, at least for the devotees. This is for the devotees in Boston congregation and devotees in North America primarily, although I've seen that other devotees are taking part as well. But the point that I wanted to make was that that Radha Gopi Vallabha slowly eased themselves into my life in a very unknown way, right from my early visits to the Boston Temple. And the way they eased themselves into my life was not so much because of the amount of service I was rendering, but it was because of the consciousness of the devotees with whom I was associating. And it was something very, very prevalent amongst the early devotees that I associated. I'm going to mention some names, but most of the names of the devotees I'll speak about will be those devotees with whom I first came in contact with in 40 North Beacon Street in 1972, and how much of an influence they had on me, because Radha Gopi Vallabha was clearly the center of their lives. And because of that experience, I've really, sometimes devotees may wonder why I so much speak and emphasize the importance of putting the temple at the center of the devotees' lives. And back then, I felt like now, I felt fortunate then, but even more fortunate I feel now, that I was able to enter into my association of devotees in a place where deities were worshipped, especially Radha Gopi Vallabha, were worshipped with such devotion. And what happened as a result of that is Radha Gopi Vallabha, gradually I became influenced by the association of the devotees into my more intimate association with them. And that's Prabhupada's, I guess you could say that's obviously everybody knows it, but Prabhupada really knew what he was doing. He really knew what he was doing by the urgency of not only spreading Krishna consciousness and making the non-devotees to devotees, but by establishing temples all over the world, and with a real sense of urgency, a sense of urgency that like no one else on the planet, of establishing the deities of Radha and Krishna in the various places where his followers began to congregate. Because Prabhupada knew it, that he wasn't going to be around forever. Of course, he lives forever in the hearts of his followers, and everyone has an opportunity to maintain Prabhupada's association and service by keeping Prabhupada within their hearts. But by establishing the deities in every temple, Prabhupada's genius was to create places all over the world where people could come and see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. take their darshan, and associate with those who are absorbed in their worship, who are always talking about their worship. And because of their absorption in their worship and talking about their worship and exemplifying a life centered on their worship, anyone who came into a temple was influenced, as I was in my first days of Krishna consciousness, before I even went up to the second floor on North Beacon Street to see Radha Gopi Vallabha. I was already influenced about their presence in the association of devotees who spoke to me about them. I can remember certain devotees. Of course, they're very... The devotees who are fixed in my mind in 1972, when I first began visiting the temple. First devotee I think I might have spoken... Well, first devotee I spoke to was somebody else. First devotee I spoke to was a devotee named Krishnarchana. He was the person who received me at the door. He was the first person I saw. And I was... As I opened the door, and he was stripping paint right in the door frame that I was coming in, and on the wall right next, he was stripping paint off. And as soon as I saw him, he had such a blissful smile on his face. And it was my first time visiting the temple, and he just welcomed me in with such a warm welcome. Then, of course, the atmosphere was permeated with the presence of, as Prabhupada calls them, the embassies of the spiritual world for a reason, because Radha Gopi Vallabha's presence was very much manifest in the minds and the service of the devotees with whom I spoke. But among the early devotees that I associated with was, of course, Trey Prabhu, who was the president at the time. Devotees, I will never forget, there are three devotees who gleaned my whatever Krishna consciousness I developed. It was because of their Bhagavad Gita classes that they gave. Whenever I came, I had to drive 60 miles from Cape Cod. I was living in a place called Manomet, near Whitehorse Beach. I had a house on the beach, and I drove 60 miles to visit the temple after work sometimes, and I would always get there in time to get to class. And three devotees would always be there. They were Mathuresh Das, my godbrother Mathuresh, always ready to give class, even if I was the only guest there. And Trey Das and Sumati Dasi. I was weaned by Sumati Devi Dasi's Bhagavad Gita classes, because she was the person I noticed that the other two weren't there, and she came off the altar after making the offering, and she saw they weren't there. She put the cushion down. I don't even know if she put the cushion down. I don't even know if there was a cushion in those days. She sat down, and she gave class to whoever was there. And another devotee is a god sister of mine, Nanda Dasi. I won't go into too much details, but she did preach to me during my early visits to the temple. And the reason why is because she joined before I did, but she and I lived in the same dormitory at the University of Massachusetts. And we lived in... We were students in the same dormitory. We knew each other, and she was more intelligent than I was. I wasted too much time, and I think she probably joined the temple right after us freshman year at the University of Massachusetts, and I started visiting it in 1972 later. Also, there are other devotees, many whom I can, who spoke to me, my godbrother Budhara Das, who joined before me, and Vivaswan Das, many devotees I can't think of all their names, but the reason why I'm mentioning some of their names is because these were people who all had an influence on me during my early visits in 1972, which continued into 1973, who influenced me because everyone was absorbed in Radha Gopi Vallabha Seva. And therefore, I was almost forced by their association to be conscious of their presence in the temple by them, even though I was still wondering, you know, what's behind the curtain sometimes. I was being told certain stories, you know, that Radha Gopi Vallabha, even when the curtains are closed, their pastimes are going on eternally. And even though you think they may be sleeping, they never sleep. And they're always, pastimes are always going on in the altar. And they would tell me some of the pastimes, the eternal pastimes of the spiritual world. And of course, there and that mystical place, which was Radharani's kitchen, which nobody was allowed to enter unless they were initiated. And I could only see it from a distance and wonder, what is that mystical place called Radharani's kitchen? That this is how it was in those days. We were actually led up into a very suspenseful life of wanting to get more intimate with Radha Gopi Vallabha because of the association of devotees. And I feel very fortunate. And this is why the point that I was making before, that Prabhupada knew what he was doing. he knew that people would come. He was very, very keen to establish the worship of Radha Krishna in the various temples at great expense, at great inconvenience, because he wanted to give everyone the opportunity to serve God. You see God, you serve God, and it's available to anyone. And that's how I was weaned into Krishna consciousness in those early years. There were many services I did when I first came to the temple. Devotees would always have me do certain things, but anything I did, I was always told it's for Radha Gopi Vallabha. I was a carpenter when I was told to fix up the basement. When I was washing the pots, cleaning the floor, whatever I was doing, it was for Radha Gopi Vallabha. And it kind of starts to have an impact on you when you begin to think that what I'm doing is for Radha Gopi Vallabha. That how fortunate I am. And I've heard enough from studying Prabhupada's books before I came to the temple. I studied Prabhupada's books for a significant amount of time, even before I visited the temple. I heard enough to know that I already had millions of births. And now, all these opportunities were opening up to me to serve God. And it wasn't just God sitting on a throne who shoots thunderbolts, who's the creator of this material world, the controller of the material world, who is to be feared as, you know, somebody who's going to punish us for that. But it was the God behind that mystical curtain who is always engaged in eternal pastimes with his eternal consort, Srimati Radharani. And the very first time that I ever got the chance to step on the altar after all of that anticipation was such a, I knew this such a privilege that I'm being invited into their presence to witness their pastimes. And I don't know what I've done. I don't know what I've done. Millions of births, what have I done to get the opportunity to get behind this curtain and to see what Radha and Gopi Vallabha are doing? Now, of course, I didn't have the eyes to see it, but I heard enough about it, and I had enough service to appreciate that this was something special. Every devotee should have this anticipation. They should be cultivated, weaned. That was Prabhupada's mentality. In fact, when I read this story, it includes, I'll get to it in a second, but it includes a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote in 1974. It was in the early part of 1974, and it was part of the story, which I'm going to read, where Prabhupada was writing to a congregational member or somebody who was been to the temple before. And I'll read the whole letter later in the story or I'm going to read. But one thing he wrote, he said to this person, he said, the young men and women at the ISKCON temple, he's speaking about Boston, the young men and women at the ISKCON temple are giving everything they have for giving others a chance to come and worship at an authorized Radha Krishna temple. So I request you to inquire into their situation and help them maintain our Vaishnava temple in the important city of Boston. That was in early part of 1974. I'll read the whole letter and the story I'm going to tell. But as I was saying, I had many services, whether it was washing pots. I remember one service I had when I first joined the temple was cleaning the temple room. And I was given the privilege to clean the walls. And the way we were trained for cleaning the temple room is that we would divide the temple into seven parts. And every day we would do one part of the temple, because it was something that everybody did. Every day we would clean the temple in our service to Radha Gopi Vallabha. Everybody in the temple had some service. And you took 1/7 of the temple and you cleaned everything from the ceiling, the walls, and to the little crevices. We had little knives with cloth. And we took the knife with the cloth and went into all the crevices on the floor and on the baseboard. And everything was cleaned spotlessly, spotlessly in our allotted time. And the next day, we moved to the next section. And this is how we were trained to clean the temple. Why? Well, very simple. Radha Gopi Vallabha's temple. This is how we were trained to clean it. And that was another one of my services, was cleaning the temple room every day. And I also had other services, driving. At one time I was the only person in the temple with a driver's license. So I was driving the temple president and my godbrother Srinath Prabhu whenever they needed to do something. They would ask me to please come and to drive them this place, that place. Anything that needed to be done. It's not so much that we were specialists. We were servants. And everybody, now whatever service they had, they weren't specialists. They were servants. The cooks, everybody was servants. They would go out. I went out every day on Harinam with Mathurish Prabhu, the two of us. We went in front of Harvard Square, called the coop. The two of us would stand and just chant for a few hours every day. He was the cook. He would make the lunch offering. He'd make the breakfast offering. He would cook for the deities. He would cook for the devotees. And in the afternoon, the two of us, we went out and we chanted. So, it's not that we were specialists. In those days, we were servants. And it was such a blissful opportunity to feel constantly and continuously a part of a family of devotees who are all servants of Radha Gopi Vallabha. A privilege. So, that was my first contact with Radha Gopi Vallabha, was through their devotees and through their association and the services that were given to me in their service. I also did some book distribution for a while. The first day I shaved my head, because in those days I was told, they didn't even let me move into the temple as much as I was begging them. They said, no, you wait. Don't be in so much of a hurry. And I had to sleep down in the basement on the cold concrete floor to prove that I wanted to live in the temple. And all I had was this sleeping bag, no cushion, no nothing. And I would sleep on it. This is how it was. You know, if you wanted to live in a temple, you had to prove that you wanted to live in the temple. And you had to beg. I had to beg. Please, can I shave up? Can I shave up? And finally, after some time, after some weeks, I can't remember how many weeks it was, but they let me shave up and move upstairs. But as I said, there were different services, but the one service that really became a focused service for me, as right after I was initiated. I remember I was saying I was doing some book distribution, and also I remember in those days the temple hardly had any money. So even though a lot of things needed to be fixed in the temple, we didn't have the money to go out and to buy the things that we needed for fixing the temple. And even though I could build things and repair things, so then I had to do certain things to help the temple, even to make Lakshmi. In fact, in 1970, maybe it might have been 1973, Srinath Prabhu and I, we used to travel together. We used to sell spiritual sky incense to boutiques and head shops. And we used to drive all over New England and trying to raise funds for the Boston Temple, because, you know, I was told, yeah, there's nothing we can do to fix the temple. We need money. Maybe you can go out and sell incense. You could do something to bring money into the temple. So we did that for some time. And then we also sold flowers for some time in order to try to bring in some extra money for the temple. So we had, again, all these different services. But it was all, as we said, for Radha Gopi Vallabha. But the first service I really had for an extended period of time was right after I got initiated. I was initiated in, I think it was April 1974. And I was, that's where my story is going to begin, what I want to read. I had the opportunity for some real focused service continuously, the same service, for about 4 months. And that was the service of preparing Radha Gopi Vallabha's new temple on Commonwealth Avenue, and preparing it so that they could be moved there, without any inconvenience whatsoever, because we were definitely conscious of the fact that when Radha Gopi Vallabha moves, there's no missing a beat. They go from one temple to the next. They don't miss an offering. They don't miss their rest. Nothing. Their days are scheduled, and when they move, everything and their servants all have to be there on ready to just completely move from one place to the other place, and just like it has to be so smooth that there's no moment of inconvenience for Radha Gopi Vallabha. And that's how my service from about May 1974 to October 1974 was defined. It was a service that was given to me to prepare to move them. And again, this is before I had even taken second initiation. I was still, of course, I was getting the opportunity to see Radha Gopi Vallabha regularly during artiks and kirtans. In fact, the one kirtan, one other thing I remembered about Radha Gopi Vallabha's mercy. I'll never forget this. Never forget this. As long as I live. Is that in 1973, amongst the many other services I was asked to do, I went out on the December Prabhupada Marathon with my Sankirtan leader. We went to Springfield, Massachusetts. We stayed in an apartment we rented in Springfield, Massachusetts, and we did book distribution every day for the whole month of December from, I guess it's about 8, 9 o'clock in the morning till 8, 9 o'clock at night every day. And during those days, we used to distribute books in front of the supermarkets and department stores. We would stand there. We had these books. They were a book that was published at that time, Lord Chaitanya and Five Features. It was the seventh chapter of Adi Lila, chapter 7. Of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it was a book that had just been published, and that was the book that we were distributing. We'd stand out in front of supermarkets, department stores, and somehow people didn't know about us there, and we would be able to stand there practically sometimes all day, every day, and just collect donations and distribute books. And we had these little cans that we held out when we were handing out the books, and we asked people to give a donation. And the labels on the can, orange labels, and the labels on the can said, clear letters, don't waste human life. Give to the Hare Krishna movement. And we had these little cans that we were holding out as we were handing out these books, asking for people to give donations. And it's right on the can, it said, don't waste human life. Of course, sometimes people would ask questions about it, and we get an opportunity, you know, to speak about what sometimes people would say, what is this Hare Krishna movement? What does it mean, don't waste human life? And they'd ask these questions. But anyways, it was a very intense marathon. And it was the first marathon for me. All day, about 11, 12 hours a day. We'd go back at night, go to sleep, wake up in the morning, have our morning program, and go out again. And it was really so intense. Now, where does Radha Gopi Vallabha come in? After being away for the whole month and performing what I considered to be, at least for myself, it was very austere. Exhausting. But when I came back, and we came on Christmas Day, and we had artik, and when the curtain opened, Radha Gopi Vallabha, they were there, and I actually somehow this was the first time I got a glimpse of what this spiritual world was that all these devotees were telling me for so many months while I was visiting. Somehow the spiritual world just opened up to me. And my feet were not touching the ground. After those austerities and after that service, I just was transported. Somehow, that was my first visit onto the altar, even though I wasn't even initiated yet. That was my first visit onto the altar. The spiritual world the devotees were talking about was somehow opened up to me. And that was, of course, still December. Now, then there was January, and services continued, and as I said, in 74 of May, I was requested to take responsibility for preparing the temple for Radha Gopi Vallabha. Before I begin to speak, I'm going to ask, I gave some photos, and I was going to ask the devotees if they could please share those photos on the screen. They're going to be, these photos were taken, I believe, it was Gaur Purnima in March of 1975. And I'll explain why I believe it was Gaur Purnima. I just had taken second initiation in January 1975. There you can see is my very dear godbrother, Peter Sharva Prabhu, who I know that he was also speaking to the devotees who had assembled. He was my first Sankirtan leader on traveling Sankirtan. And he was... Anyways, I could speak the rest of my allotted time on the glories of Pritishrava. Such a wonderful Vaishnava, still a dedicated servant, and I'm sure his memories and his service of Radha Gopi Vallabha will never be forgotten by them, nor will he ever forget the service he rendered to them. But he is there also, another godbrother. The next slide, I believe, is Shivananda Prabhu. Ajamita Prabhu, he was there at the time. He is unknown at this time of his whereabouts. I do not know. But he was there at that time. And then next, I believe, is Shivananda Prabhu. Is it? I'm not sure. No, it's Pritishrava Prabhu again. And of course, that's me with the chamara. That's part of the Abhishek. I wanted you to see the temple room because this temple room, as it is now, was the way it was originally made in 1974 after Radha Gopi Vallabha had moved to the temple. And I'll speak a little bit about that. Another photo was this is a photo of Shivananda Prabhu who came with his wife Madame Mohan Mohini, and they came and they served a Radha Gopi Vallabha. He's still very active. He lives in Prabhupada Village in North Carolina. I don't know if he was invited to speak. Both him and his wife were definitely servants of Radha Gopi Vallabha, and I'm sure they have so many stories. And another person whose heart, I'm sure, was captured by Radha Gopi Vallabha, as they captured so many hearts. Next slide. That is Subhananda Prabhu. He is no longer active in Krishna consciousness either. This Pritishrava again, and this person with the chamara in the corner. And this is also another picture. These are five pictures that were taken. We don't have a lot of pictures of the early days of the temple. Why, I don't know. Of course, I do know there were no mobile phones at that time with cameras. And the thought of taking pictures wasn't a very popular idea at that time. And the only reason why we have any pictures whatsoever is because somebody had the foresight to leave some slides in the temple president closet, which I discovered when I became temple president in 1979. And I gave those slides to Gangampupad Prabhu, who very kindly took all the slides that we had from the early days, and there weren't a lot of them. I don't know, maybe 100 of them. That's it. That's all the photos that we have. Maybe some congregational members have more. But Gangampupad scanned them all, and I've kept them. And I've just started to show them. But although Gangampupad also, I believe, made a website where they can also, about the early days of Boston. So, anyways, when I saw these photos, I was meditating on them, and I decided I wanted to write something about the work that went into preparing 72 Commonwealth Avenue for Radha Gopi Vallabha. So this will take a little time, not that long. I may make a few comments along the way, but I believe at least for the devotees in North America, you may find this story very interesting. It definitely highlights the consciousness all the devotees had in their service to Radha Gopi Vallabha, and including myself and the other devotees who were with me at the time, that somehow everybody was very eager to provide the best place possible for them to move to. So I will begin and reading now. In 1974, the Boston Temple president, Trey Prabhu, with the assistance of other senior devotees, acquired a new property for Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha in an area of Boston, which, unknown to them at the time, was to become one of the most prestigious areas in Northeast United States within the next 10 years. Fortunately, the building was acquired at a time when the property value was not as high as it would soon become. One thing I did in preparing this is I went on to the records site, and I downloaded all the records that's public domain of the transactions, so I could get the exact dates of when we actually acquired the building and were able to enter into the building, which was in May 15th, 1974, according to the documents on the website that I downloaded. There are many documents there, the loans that we took out, the people, the mortgages that we took out, the transaction, the down payments that were made, all these documents were there. I downloaded them all just to refresh my memory of the dates. but anyways, so at the time when we first acquired the building, you'll hear, it wasn't such a prestigious place. As many of you have probably heard from me before, Srila Prabhupada was shown a photo of the newly acquired building and was told about the building's general location. As soon as he saw the photo, he said that he would visit the temple on his 1975 North American tour. Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita provides the reason why his plans changed. Then in the Lilamrita it states that in Toronto, August 7th, 1975, suddenly Srila Prabhupada's North American tour was interrupted. A telegram from Tejas in New Delhi announced that if Prabhupada wanted an interview with Indira Gandhi, he would have to come at once. The telegram contained no details, and his secretary was unable to reach the Delhi temple by phone. But Prabhupada didn't need to hear anything more. When an auspicious opportunity arose, he said, a devotee should act at once. Devotees in Boston New Vrindavan in New York received the news of Prabhupada's sudden departure with shock. He would not be visiting their temples, and they felt the impact of the stark realization that Srila Prabhupada could leave them at any moment. He was not obliged to stay with them, and they should not take his presence for granted. They had his instructions. This was sufficient. Of course, important decisions still had to be made. In Boston, the devotees had expected Prabhupada to look at a new building with them. But based on his instruction, they could become responsible and carry out his will, even in his absence. And this is from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 6, Chapter 47. It's a small detail, but the account given in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita gives the impression that we wanted Srila Prabhupada to see the building before it was purchased. However, the building had already been purchased by the time Srila Prabhupada had seen the photo. Additionally, Srila Prabhupada had written a letter from Bombay to a congregational member on March 26, 1974, indicating that he was aware that we were already looking for a new temple building at that time. In his letter, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Please accept my greetings. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter dated 16th March, 1974. Regarding the sale of the temple building at 40 North Beacon Street, the best thing is to go and consult with our president in charge of the Boston branch, Tridas Adhikari. Your desire to keep a personal temple room in your home is commendable, and you can do that in any case, wherever you are, but keeping an altar and offering your food to the Lord is prasadam. Wherever you are, by keeping an altar and offering your food to the Lord is prasadam. Our purpose for keeping a large temple, however, is for inviting the public. I came to the USA just to try to give a chance to as many people as possible to take to Krishna consciousness, because it is the only hope for humanity in this increasingly demoniac, godless age. If you are seriously interested in maintaining a Vaishnava temple, why not go and try to help my disciples there in Boston? Whether they are going to sell and relocate or remain, if you are financially able to assist them, that will be taken by Krishna as great service. The young men and women at the ISKCON temple are giving everything they have for giving others a chance to come and worship at an authorized Radha Krishna temple. So I request you to inquire into their situation and help them maintain our Vaishnava temple in the important city of Boston. To check if my memory was correct about the date we began work on the new building, today I accessed the Massachusetts Land Records website to confirm the exact dates, this is me, when the first papers were signed, notarized, and submitted to the records office. According to these public documents, the first transaction which allowed us to begin work in the building took place on May 15, 1974. I suspect, therefore, that it was within a few days from that date when we were able to begin our work in preparing the new building for Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha's arrival planned for the end of the summer. My godbrother Naksha Chanemi Das, who was an experienced carpenter before coming to Krishna consciousness, and his less experienced helper, Naranjana Das, were assigned to make the building renovations required so that Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha would not be in any way inconvenienced when they would relocate to their new home. This gave the two of us about 4 months to prepare the building for Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha's arrival. We were also reminded that all their devoted servants would be coming with them, probably on the same day. If devotees today would have seen the state of disrepair that the building was in when we first arrived there with all of our tools, they would be able to better understand the kind of task that was before us. There was just the two of us, along with an order: please don't forget for whom you are preparing this building. The building was previously a 5-story apartment building with 2 apartments on each floor. 10 apartments altogether. That means that previously there were 10 kitchens, two on each floor. But all but two of the kitchens had to be either completely torn out, or in some cases, only the sinks were left for hygiene and hand washing. One kitchen was kept on the second floor for storing, heating, and serving prasadam to the devotees and guests, and the remaining kitchen in the basement was enlarged to the size of the original apartment, with new equipment installed by the workers of the companies from which they were purchased. It was in that basement kitchen where Radha Gopivallava's offerings would be prepared and then carried up two flights of stairs six times a day. The plates were to be carried two flights and not one, because Radha Gopivallava were to be temporarily worshipped on the second floor, while the permanent temple room on the first floor was to be completed. Since Srila Prabhupada always emphasized cleanliness and punctuality for those engaged in deity worship, the cooks and the pujaris would also have to adjust to a new scenario in the new temple. They were accustomed to making a relatively short walk from the kitchen to the altar in the old temple. Soon, however, in order to make sure the offerings were finished, served onto the deity's plates, and then covered with cloth to reach the altar on time, they would have to finish at least 5 minutes before schedule. In those days, finishing 5 minutes before schedule was not always the easiest thing to get done. And especially devotees always had a tendency to get things on the plate, and it was a short walk. The devotees I remember who were cooking and serving Radha Gopivallava at that time were Mathuresh Prabhu, Sumati. She was also, I don't know if she was cooking so much, but she was the pujari running down to get the plates when they weren't there on time. And Nanda Dasi, I believe, was also there. Another god sister, Gandharvaka Dasi. They were, in the early days, when they were worshipping the deities, they were oftentimes seen running down. Where are the plates? Where are the plates? Where are the plates? This was a scenario when we first moved into the temple. So anyways, they would have to finish at least 5 minutes before schedule. At the same time, however, the cooks would naturally want the cooked preparations to be kept hot for the deity's satisfaction. I remember that this was initially a challenge for both the cooks and the pujaris. But as with all service for Radha Gopivallava's pleasure, devotees were always ready to do the needful. The building also had an old elevator in the center of the building, which appeared as if it hadn't been used in decades. Although I'm sure the cooks would have preferred to see the elevator repaired, it was decided that the cost to repair it would have been way beyond the budget allotted for building renovation. So Nakshatanami and I just left the elevator car in its tracks and converted the car into a closet for storing kitchen supplies just outside the kitchen. We then removed everything else from the elevator shaft from top to bottom in order to bring as much natural light as possible from the skylight on the roof into the building. To say the least, it was not a building designed for a temple and communal living. So many walls had to be removed, doorways and windows had to be permanently but aesthetically sealed, and so many more details had to be finished in time. But because there was a vision, and Sri Sri Radha Gopivallava were clearly established as the persons for whom everything would need to be done, not only in our minds, but in the minds of the administrators, cooks, pot washers, pujaris, and temple cleaners, everyone was inspired to do all that we could in order to prepare their facilities for them. From the day Nakshatanami Prabhu and I first walked into the building with our tools, we began sleeping in the building, eating our meals in the building, working all day long in the building, chanting our rounds in the building, and we were also requested to stay there to guard the building at night. The two of us slept on the first floor right by the front door with a weapon next to us in order to protect the premises from vandalism, which at that time was a commonplace event in that part of Boston. Actually, we slept. We had a shotgun, which the temple had legally owned, and we would sleep. Sometimes the devotees would warn us, because two of us had a habit of sleeping so soundly that on the first floor with a shotgun next to us, they would ask us, you know, what would happen if somebody ever broke in. They would probably just break down the door and pick up the shotgun, and you wouldn't even know anything happened. And they were trying to constantly remind us to try to be more conscientious if we're leaving a shotgun by our side, to make sure that somebody else didn't use it before us. But anyways, that's what we had, and we slept at the front door with it, because that's the kind of neighborhood it was when we first moved in. But as we already explained later, neighborhood changed dramatically. I will fast forward about 4 months now, just before the time when Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha were being prepared for their first and only journey since their appearance in Alston, where Srila Prabhupada first called them to appear. Almost daily, Nakshatanami and I were being asked, "Will the kitchen be ready? Will the altar be ready? Will the temple room be ready? Will the pujari room be ready?" It was intense. Everyone in the whole temple was conscious that Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha would be moving, and they wanted to make sure they could also prepare the facilities they were responsible for in their service to them. Radha Gopi Vallabha's seva and comfort was at the top of everyone's priority list. As mentioned before, the plan all along was to temporarily worship Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha on the second floor until the permanent temple room would be ready. The front room on the second floor, therefore, was prepared as their temple room, considering the size of the altar required for Radha Gopi Vallabha, little Radha Krishna, Panchatattva, and Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra, and the amount of space the pujaris required to bathe and dress them. There was not much space for everyone else who came to worship them. But somehow it worked, although it did seem that the lack of space became an impetus to get the permanent temple room completed for them as quickly as possible. I remember the day when it came time for Radha Gopi Vallabha to move. It was the beginning of October 1974. I seem to remember that Nakshatanami Prabhu stayed in the new temple along with the pujaris and cooks in case some quick fixes were required. The deities needed to be settled on their new altar. They needed to get their next boga offering and arti in time, and they needed to take their afternoon rest in time. I was definitely at North Beacon Street, however, in order to remove part of the old altar, which could not be removed until Radha Gopi Vallabha departed. A small group of devotees had assembled just outside the door of the old temple with the kirtan to send off Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha for their 6-mile journey to their new home. The only vehicle we had at the time was a small Toyota station wagon. We opened up the back hatch to the vehicle, while Adi Keshava Das and Sumati Devi Dasi were carrying Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha down the stairs. They came out the door of the building, and within no time, they both carefully moved their way into the back of the hatch of the car, sitting cross-legged and holding Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha in such a way that they were casting their merciful glances upon all the assembled devotees who were waiting to see them off. The hatch was then closed, and Radha Gopi Vallabha were quickly taken away on their journey. I remember thinking right at that moment how fortunate the people driving behind Radha Gopi Vallabha would be. In front of each vehicle, just behind them, their beautiful and effulgent forms were being fully displayed to the drivers and passengers from the back window of the car moving in front of them. Moreover, the drive was all city driving, meaning it was all stop-and-go traffic. So there was bound to be so many different cars moving right behind them from the beginning to the end of their excursion. So I was just thinking, I was meditating as they were leaving. Radha Gopi Vala, there they were. Adi Keshav and Sumati were sitting in the trunk of the Toyota with the hatch closed and the window there. And they were sitting with them on their laps. And Radha Gopi Balava were facing outside the back of the car. And anyone coming behind them would have to see Radha Gopi Balava. And I was meditating, how fortunate. Every one of those cars, the people in every one of those cars getting darshan, how often would Radha Gopi Balava out in the streets? It was their only journey. That one time, their 6-mile journey from Alston to Boston, that was it. It was the only time they were ever moved from their altar and brought to their new home. So once the deities left, and since most of the devotees were waiting to receive Shishi Radha Gopi Balava at their new home, the remaining devotees on North Beacon Street quickly left, hoping to be able to get to the new temple to receive them before they arrived. I was designated to take responsibility for removing the wooden canopy from the old altar, along with a few helpers. It's not so much that we needed the canopy, although we did have an idea how it could be used, but the new owners wanted everything out of the building by a certain date, and we were trying our best to comply. However, upon attempting to carry out the canopy, we soon discovered that there was no way to remove it from the temple room without breaking it apart, a task which would have rendered the canopy useless for all intents and purposes. It was not only made of wood, but a lot of plaster was used on it too. If we were to, maybe Somadas may know something about that. I think he was probably the person who was involved in making that canopy and making the altar. If we were to utilize it or even memorialize it in some way for Shri Radha Gopi Vallabha's service, it needed to come out in one piece. However, it was just too big for the stairway. It was too big for any of the doorways, and it was too big to be lowered out from any of the second floor windows. We talked about doing something drastic to the building in order to get it out. Started thinking of different things we would do, knock out the windows, different things. For us, this was like, it was Radha Gopi Vallabha's altar. And somehow, we felt some strong desire to take it and to bring it and to memorialize it in some way. But we talked about doing something drastic, but then we quickly realized, we came to our senses and realized that it would be a breach of contract with the new owners to do something like that. Therefore, after careful consideration, we decided that we really had no choice but to let the new owners figure out what to do with the canopy. I then took one last search throughout the building to see if there was anything remaining which might have missed someone's attention. We paid our obeisances to a holy tirtha, a place which their lordships and their pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, sanctified by their presence. And trying my best to not think about it too much, almost tearfully, we said our goodbyes and returned to the new temple. So that was in October 1974. When Radha Gopi Vallabha moved to their temple, that was the preparation and the eagerness and the consciousness their servants had in bringing them to their new temple. Once they got there, as we said, their seva continued without interruption. Details had to be taken care of. Everybody was very conscientious to make sure. I'm very grateful, all the devotees who were involved. Actually, one of the persons who masterminded all of this although Jaidas Prabhu is involved, I have to give credit actually also. I was not a mastermind, I was simply a servant. But Adi Keshava Das, who was then very much instrumental in all of these, he was the temple president for some time of Boston, later to become the GBC, later to become Adi Keshava Swami. He was the devotee who was fighting and had been given so much instructions by Srila Prabhupada when we had a court case, a famous court case in 77, maybe early part of 77. Anyways, he was very instrumental, and he was, I would have to say, he was a major contributor to inculcating the service to Radha Gopi Vallabha. He was always reminding me constantly about what we were doing in the new building and how it needed to be done in time. So anyways, the deities moved there in 74, October. We continued and the construction of their temple downstairs. At the end of 1974, we spent most of our time working on the new temple. Blue walls that you saw painted were the paint, were the color of the walls that were painted for the new temple. The altar that was built for Radha Gopi Vallabha was built to move Radha Gopi Vallabha from the second floor to the first floor, to their permanent temple. I remember when my initiation took place in January, second initiation, in January 1975, we had the fire sacrifice in the new temple room. So somewhere from November, December to January, we prepared their new temple room and their altar for them and moved them. And then in, I believe it was in March in 1975, after I had taken second initiation, that is when I was given the opportunity to go and to see Srila Prabhupada for the first time. I had never seen him before. I only seen him in videos, and I associated with him from his books, heard about him from his disciples, and Prabhupada came, I believe he arrived at JFK in March, and I went with one other devotee who was to become the new temple president at that time, anyways, that's a whole other story about seeing Prabhupada, but it's not directly connected to Radha Gopi Vallabha, but in some sense, it is indirectly connected to Radha Gopi Vallabha, because after seeing Prabhupada, seeing him in the airport, being there for his, he was giving a press conference in the terminal, running behind him as he was going out. I remember the experience. Prabhupada was running out. He was walking out with his cane to get in the car, and I remember being behind him, although I can't find any pictures, but I remember being not far behind him, and I was running. Prabhupada was walking, and I couldn't keep up with him. Maybe that's why I wasn't in the pictures, because Prabhupada was walking, I was running, and I couldn't keep up with him. And when we finally got to the car, then everybody had to jump in the cars, because then the next part of the drama was to quickly get into the car and to catch up to Prabhupada's car so that we could see him in the window of the car on, I think it was Whitestone, whatever the highway it was that we were on. We got next to Prabhupada's car so we could look in the window and see him. And then we would rush to the temple to get there in time to greet him for his Abhishek, his foot bathing ceremony. And we were hoping he would speak, but he didn't. He went right up to his room after his Abhishek And somebody else gave a talk. I think it was Kirtananda Swami gave a talk. But not only did I get to see Srila Prabhupada on that visit, but after Prabhupada had his prasadam, it was probably his lunch, prasadam, one devotee who was taking Prabhupada's plates, he brought Prabhupada's plates down, and there was a door, I forget what they're called, the kind of doors that open up, the top part of the door opens and the bottom half stays closed. And the devotee had Prabhupada's plate there, and I saw that he was handing out remnants from Prabhupada's plate. And it wasn't my nature, but somehow I realized I was looking at the amount of prasadam and I was measuring the distance I was to those plates. So I decided to get on my hands and knees and I crawled under the devotees. And I somehow, I don't know how I did it, but I got up just in time to get a little shuck, a little spinach from Prabhupada's plate, which I think was Shruti Kirti, if I'm not mistaken, hand, and quickly took it. And then we had to go back to Boston, and I was surcharged to continue my work, which during that year was preparing, because Prabhupada was scheduled to come, among the many services I had in 1975, was preparing Srila Prabhupada's quarters for him for his scheduled visit, which was supposed to be August 1975. And anyways, that seeing Prabhupada in, at the Kennedy Airport, seeing him at Henry Street in New York, and getting his remnants definitely was something that gave me an extra added impetus to go on and finish whatever was required to bring and to host Srila Prabhupada, who was going to come and take darshan of Shishi Radha Gopi Vallabha in August 1975. So anyways, that's my story. And I wanted to share it with everyone. And there's a lot of more things I could say about service to Radha Gopi Vallabha that went beyond their journey from 40 North Beacon Street. I'm sure you heard a lot of stories from devotees who had service to Radha Gopi Vallabha, direct service to Radha Gopi Vallabha. I know Soma Prabhu has spoken. I know Sumati has spoken. I know Nanda Dasi has spoken. Maybe there were others who had direct service. The first picture I was able to see of me in 40 North Beacon Street was a picture taken in 1972. I posted it on the website amongst many other pictures from 1971 and 1972. And this picture must have been when I just first started visiting the temple, because it was all the devotees were sitting on the floor in the prasadam room, and it looked like it was the Sunday feast. And I was sitting, not looking at the camera, I was sitting with my back against a pillar, a white pillar, and my hair was somewhat long, but not really long, and that's how I knew it must have been 1972, because by the time I moved into the temple in 1973, it was very long. But this, it was not so long. And I was also eating with my left hand. And I knew that here I had a spoon in my left hand. I had long hair. And I was honoring prasadam. And it was almost 100% sure it was me. It's the same clothes I was wearing at the time. And that was the only picture, though. I believe it must have been in late 1972. But there are some very nice pictures of Mother Isha in those photos. And they are there on my website. I believe those pictures of Mother Isha were taken in 1972. Maybe it was the same time I started visiting, or it may have even been before I started visiting the temple 1972. So there are many, certainly many stories, and I'm sure Satsvarup Maharaj today will have so many wonderful stories. Satsvarup Maharaj was the president, but he left the presidency. I'm sure he'll tell the whole story. And many devotees became the presidents before him. I believe Gohari was the president. Tridas Prabhu was the president. Another devotee, I believe Prajapati. They were presidents before I started visiting the temple. And before that was Satsvarup Maharaj, of course, who purchased 40 North Beacon Street and moved that from the Glenville Avenue temple, 95 Glenville Avenue. There's a whole story, of course, when that was first moved. But no Radha Gopi Vallabh at the time. It was only small Radha Krishna deities being worshipped. I remember my godbrother Mathuresh Prabhu, he used to tell me when he first started coming to the temple in 1971, and they were having kirtan in the temple, and it was before Radha Gopi Vallabh installed, that little Radha Krishna was there, but they were so small that it took him a long time for him to even realize. He saw Jagannath and Panchatattva, but he didn't even realize they were on the altar. Because comparatively for the others that were there, they were very small. But they were there in 19th. And I'm not sure when they were put there. But it was in 1971 that Radha Gopi Vallabha was installed. And we have some wonderful pictures, of course, of their installation when Satsvarup Maharaj was there. And Gauri Devi Dasi was there for the installation. And Sumati Devi Dasi, I believe, she was their first pujari. Although Gauri Devi Dasi was there for the installation. I believe it was Sumati the very next day who was assigned to be Radha Gopi Vallabha's pujari in 1971. And I'm sure they have many wonderful stories. Unfortunately, I was not there. I was doing too many other things. And I didn't know about Radha Gopi Vallabha in 1971. But what I was doing is of no significance to anybody, so there's no need to mention it. But you'll hear about some wonderful stories, I'm sure, from Satsvarup Maharaj about those early days. And then in 1975, 1976, of course, I was serving Radha Gopi Vallabha in many other ways. I was distributing books for some years, and then I became a bhakta leader for some time, and then I became temple president, then I became an itinerary traveler, then I became the regional secretary, and then I became the GPC, and somehow Radha Gopi Vallabha still are, because of those formative years in Krishna consciousness, of making it very much a part of my heart that service to Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha is something that should be treasured. It's a privilege. It's an opportunity, which is rare. And I feel so fortunate that somehow that my first visit to a temple was in a place that Srila Prabhupada was already thinking before me of the importance of establishing Radha Gopi Vallabha there in 1971 so that I could be there and so many fortunate other souls could be there, and his intention, as he described in his letter of 1974, could be fulfilled. That so many people did come. Prabhupada wrote about how degraded materialistic civilization is. We want a place where Radha and Krishna are worshipped, to bring them to come to see and to worship Radha and Krishna, and to be given the opportunity to see them, to hear their glories, and to be given an opportunity to serve them. What a great fortune. And therefore, when so much emphasis is made about the importance of reminding the devotees, yes, somehow this was Prabhupada's vision. We should enshrine it. Yes, there's so many other important preaching projects. There's so many other important preachers who are traveling, introducing people to Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada's meditation was, he was not going to be around for long. We're not going to be around for long. But the deities he installed, they will remain as long as those who worship them and serve him in a mood similar to that which was expected by Srila Prabhupada. They will become a very important part of everyone's life. This was Prabhupada's vision. He knew what he was doing. And therefore, we can feel eternally grateful, obviously, and anyone who similarly came with a similar opportunity, wherever the Lord has manifest in these forms, this is his pastime. We read about it in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. We've been reading so many wonderful verses before we stop giving classes about how the Lord's pastimes are eternally manifest throughout creation in his forms as the deity. And Narada Muni was instructing Gopakumara, because Gopakumara was inquiring about Narada Muni. He said, why is it state? There's places in the scriptures, there's some statements that are made almost demeaning, that it almost to suggest that those who worship the deities are not as in an exalted status of those who have direct service to the Lord. Who have direct service to the Lord and who are directly seeing the Lord and serving the Lord and will go to the Lord because of their direct service to the Lord and because of their purified consciousness. Somehow it seems that there are certain verses in the Shastra which almost seems to say that they're not such an exalted status. They're neophytes. They're Prakriti Bhaktis. And it almost makes it sound as if those who worship the deities are lesser. And Narada Muni explained within so many verses that no, they are not lesser. The same perfection is available to anyone. To anyone who sees Krishna fully manifest in the deity form and serves him and her, Radha Gopi Vallabha, to serve the divine couple in that consciousness. Generally we see, however, that such persons, to be complete in their worship, to see the Lord, to be complete in their worship, they must also see the Lord's presence in the hearts of others. They must see and worship and respect the presence of the Lord and give respect to the presence of the Lord in the hearts of others. And therefore, sometimes we see that persons who worship the deity, they may be sectarian in their worship. They don't see Krishna present in the hearts of others. They may disrespect his presence in others' hearts. They may offend Vaishnavas. Their worship is not as complete as those who are complete in their worship. And therefore, we may see that in the Shastra, some statements are made about those persons who worship the deities with imperfect consciousness. But nonetheless, Narada Muni makes a very, very important point, and Srila Sanatana Goswami makes this point very clearly in his commentaries also, in these verses, that yes, one should worship the deity in the right consciousness to get the full benefit. And very quickly, one will achieve perfection by worshiping in the right consciousness. But the verses state that even those who don't have the right consciousness, even if somehow they're still sectarian, even if they haven't learned yet to properly respect the presence of the Lord in the heart of all living beings, if they remain steady in their worship of their Ishtadev, if they continue to worship that form which is dear to their hearts and remain steady, then in time they will achieve the same perfection which is achieved by those who worship fully in the right consciousness. Such is the important emphasis being placed, certainly, by Srila Prabhupada, by Narada Muni, Sanatana Goswami, and of course, Gopakumara's repetition of these verses to the Mathura Brahmin as he was enlightening him about the presence of the Lord in the form of the deity and the pastimes of the Lord which are manifest in the deity form. Yes, everyone will gain access to that perfection, even if imperfectly rendered services there, if they simply continue and to remain steady. Of course, if one is careful to not commit offenses to Vaishnavas, then not commit offenses to other living beings, then the process of worshipping the deity will act in a more complete and a fuller way. But even those who don't worship in the right way will still get the opportunity for perfection. But as Sanatana Goswami says, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains in a commentary also, it will take time. It will take some time. We should have that faith and keep that hope. The Lord is manifesting himself in so many places, and to the degree that the devotees keep the right consciousness in their service and help everyone else be in the right consciousness by meditating upon them as non-different from the Lord, remaining steady in their service to their worshipful deities, and telling others about them. This is Prabhupada's mission. This was Prabhupada's mission. He gave the example that it should be run on, like a train runs on two tracks. Must be there. There must be the Pancharatrika Vidhi and the Bhagavad Vidhi. You cannot just go on one track. Both tracks have to be there for the train to move. Yes, exalted devotees who glorify the Lord, who's always speaking the Lord about the glories of the Lord, who see the presence of the Lord in the hearts of everyone, yes, they are following the path of Bhagavad Vidhi, but Prabhupada said both have to be there. The Pancharatrika Vidhi also. And he emphasized the great importance of side by side worshipping the deities along with our glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is a little bit I can share of my memories of Sri Sri Radha Gopi Vallabha and why their service and the devotees who continue to serve them is very dear to me. And of course, I hope that whatever I've said today will help them to understand why their service is dear to me. And if anything that I said will help them in their service to Radha Gopi Vallabha, then that's really why I wanted to speak today. To glorify them and to increase the consciousness of them and to increase the mentality devotees should have and the consciousness that we did have when they first appeared there and when we served them. they're not brass statues on the altar. They should not be treated like that. They are Shri Radha Gopi Vallabha, who are manifesting their eternal pastimes. When the curtains are open, we may not be able to see. When the curtains are closed, we may not be able to see. But these pastimes are always going on. I even remember devotees would telling me, we put Radha Gopi Vallabha to rest, but actually, we think they're resting, but we know better. Their pastimes are eternal. I remember them even telling me this when I was first coming to the temple and thinking this way about Radha Gopi Vallabha when the curtains were closed. Yes, I'm being told they're resting, but devotees told me, no, something else is going on. I don't know what it is. I can't see it. Something's going on. It's the spiritual world. And I'll never forget the first time in 1975 when I stepped on that altar. Oh my God. I will never forget. Somehow, everything that devotees told me, everything that I was trying to remember, I was somehow, curtains were closed, yes, but I was on the other side. I was on the inside. I was on the outside. I was on the inside. And I was thinking, what have I done? How is this possible? I've heard so many times from Prabhupada, millions of birds. Here I am in the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now I have to make an offering for them. And of course I was nervous, and I was in so many different ways. I was in awe and reverence. And Prabhupada did tell us that our worship of Radha and Krishna, the beginning, yes, must be there with his worship in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan and Adarant. In fact, just this morning I was listening to class, Nectar of Devotion class. Prabhupada was saying that in class. Nectar of Devotion, I think it was in December 1972 in Bombay. Prabhupada was saying, we cannot worship Radha and Krishna yet. We should not think that we're qualified. We've established the worship of Radha and Krishna, but their service should be done in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Which is with awe and reverence, punctuality, and we should be very, very careful about not being whimsical in their seva, thinking that, and Prabhupada did speak about in today's talk also, about those who are whimsical, who were foolish sahajas. He spoke about this also in today's talk. Those who are whimsical and thinking that they were directly serving the Lord. But no, they did not. He said, well, he warned us, we should have the right consciousness in serving. Anyways, I believe I've talked enough. I was told this presentation is going until 10 more minutes, I guess. Vanamali Pandit Prabhu, I'm sorry if I spoke too long. Forgive me. But if I said anything, if I forgot, especially if I forgot to mention any devotees, please forgive me. There were so many devotees I know who were in the same consciousness, who were sold out and served them much more than I did. They might have come later, but their service was no less than any of the services of the devotees of whom I spoke about in those early days. And if I were to start naming them, it would take me at least 10-15 minutes to start naming them all. But they are all dear to Radha Gopi Vallabha. And they know how, in their hearts, how dear Radha Gopi Vallabha is to them. Somehow it seems anybody who renders service to not Radha Gopi Vallabha, they'll never be able to forget the ecstasy again and again and again. They are very, very merciful. So, Vanamali Pandit, what should I do with the remaining time I have?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the really wonderful and heartwarming pastimes of our dear Radha Gopiyula. So, we have a special guest amongst us. So, Radhanath Swami Maharaj is here.
Oh, Radhanath Maharaj is here. Oh my God. Maharaj, have I been speaking in your presence? Maybe you just came on. I will hope so.
I was here, Maharaj, from the time you were introduced, and I heard every single precious nectarine word of your wonderful narration. Thank you.
Oh my God. Maharaj, he's another devotee who always reminds me of Radha and Krishna, but it's Radha Gopinath. He always reminds me how I'm their servant, and he won't let me forget them. Please, Maharaj, if it is your time to speak, I should not say one more word. Please continue and take over, I should say, and give us the nectar that we've all been hankering for.
There's a question for you.
Miranjan Swami Maharaj, are you okay for answering a few questions?
Oh, really? It's not Radhanath Maharaj's turn to speak?
No, Maharaj, it's 10 o'clock.
Radhanath
Swami Maharaj, she will speak at 10 o'clock.
I see. Okay, so if you want me to answer some questions, I can answer some questions.
Hare Krishna devotees, if you have any questions, please type your questions in the chat, or you could also raise your hand and we will call you.
As a question, did you get a chance to search issue, Radha Gopinath on the altar, maybe changing the dresses or offering them fruits, any pujari services and any realizations or anything which you want to share?
Yes, right after I took second initiation, I was asked to render some service on the altar. I didn't bathe and dress Radha Gopivallava, no. I was bathing and dressing little Radha and Krishna for some time. Not very long. I think it was just a few weeks, and then I was asked to go on book distribution. And then I went on book distribution for some time. I can't remember exactly when, but then at some point when I was out on book distribution, I was asked to come back and to be the head cook for the temple. My godbrother Maturish had been the head cook for quite some time, and he was going to go out on book distribution. And I was told I was the only Brahmin available who could come back and to cook for Radha Gopivallava. I was resistant to the idea because I wanted to stay out on book distribution, but I was pressured to come. And in those days, I had to quickly learn how to cook the daily sweet. I had to cook the Mangal Aarti sweets. I had to cook the breakfast offering for the deities. I had to cook breakfast for all the devotees in the temple, about maybe 50 devotees. I had to cook the lunch offering for the deities. I had to cook lunch for all the devotees in the temple. And I had to cook the fruit offering for the deities. And my service began usually about 5 o'clock in the morning, And it ended about chanting my japa before going into the kitchen. And then it ended around sometime in the afternoon once the fruit offering was brought up. I didn't have to cook the last two offerings. And then, after finished cooking the fruit offering, because I had my rounds chanted, I was asked to go out on Harinam, because I was the only person who knew how to play Mridanga. Somehow, I sneaked out and went on book distribution instead, and didn't go on Harinam. And I did that for several weeks. That was my service to Radha Gopi Vallabha for some time. Although I did some pujari services, it was mostly cooking for them. And I learned everything I knew at the time from my godbrother, Mathuresh Prabhu, who taught me how to make everything. When I was the cook, the temple president used to get taste plates of all the offerings that were made for the deities, of everything that was cooked for the deities. And when I went up to the temple president, who was Adi Keshava at the time, and I asked him, how were the preparations? And he used to tell me, you make great lemons. I said, oh, what do you mean? He said, well, the lemons were really good. You sliced them just right. And that's all he had to say about my cooking. So I guess somehow, I don't know if Radha Gopi Vallabha ever accepted it, but I was making pakoras, samosas, sweet rice, and everything, sabjis, all kinds of sabjis. But somehow the temple president liked the lemons I sliced. but that was the service I had, more direct service I had for them. That was in 1975. Some seva on the altar, I did bathe and dress, as I said, and I did artiks for some time. It was special. But not much time. Before I know it, I was out on book distribution. For the next several years, that's what I had to do. So I didn't get that much time on the altar after that 1975. Okay. Other question?
We have a question from Kuldeep Ravalpro.
Oh, I see. I just saw a message. It's short. It's from Gargamuni. Your cooking was hearty and delicious. I just saw that. I only saw part of it. But was I cooking when you were there, Gargamuni? Or maybe I was cooking on Sankirtan, traveling Sankirtan. Maybe that's what it was. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Krishna Kumar Das.
Yes, Krishna Kumar.
Thank you so much for such wonderful, lovely memories of Radha Gopi Janavala, Gopi Vallabha. Maharaj, I wanted to ask you, you said after the marathon, you had the glimpse of spiritual world. If you could elaborate a little bit more and share. I know we are all, I mean, especially me, I'm very unqualified to hear anything like that, but if you could share for us our benefit. Thank you, Maharaj.
To say to have a glimpse of the spiritual world, I guess the best I could describe it as, I was not conscious of my body. I was not conscious of anything else except Radha Gopi Vallabha. That's all. I got a glimpse, momentarily, got a glimpse of not having anything to do with this material world and having everything to do in divine service to the divine couple. And what I was doing there, how they were accepting that service, what they were doing, what I was seeing, was beyond my capacity to see. I will not describe what I saw. It's what I experienced. And what I experienced was that I was not part of anything to do with this world, and it was there. which I was eternally meant to be. And that was there with me. I can't remember how long it was there with me, but as I said, as I was dancing in their presence, they were glancing. And Gopi Vallabha and Radharani never glanced at me before. And they were glancing at me. Somehow, they accepted the austerity I performed. And I felt privileged to be in that kirtan and to be in their divine presence. That's about the best as I can describe it.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. We have a question from Anasuya Devi Dasi. What is the best way to serve Radha Gopi Vala when we are in separation, unable to come to the temple regularly due to family responsibilities, health issues, etc.?
Well, by meditating on service to them. In fact, just the other day, I always listen to Prabhupada every day. And I don't miss it. And just the other day, Prabhupada was telling the story about the Brahmin and the sweet rice. And he was, as he is in telling all stories, he was very graphic in emphasizing the point that our Ishtadev, our worshipful deity, can be worshipped by meditating on their service, and it's non-different than physically doing it. We can worship on decorating Radha Gopi Vallabha's altar. We can worship on cleaning their altar. We can worship on telling others about their glories and the services that we rendered to them and the great value and impact it has had on our lives that we'll never be able to forget. These are all different ways that we can continue to serve Radha Gopi Vallabha in separation and more. I only touched on them. But being conscious of them is one way. You're conscious of them. Anyone who comes in contact with you will come in contact with them by your consciousness. Yes? Any other questions?
Thank you so much, Maharaj. Veera Prabhu asked a question. Did Srila Prabhupada ever visit 72 Koma?
No. Physically, he never visited there. I can tell the whole story, but it's a long story, of the plans and the instructions that I had in preparing for his visit in August of 1972, but I've told that many times in other forums. I'm not going to tell it today. I wanted to avoid telling it because it's a long story. But when he didn't come in August 1975, as he was scheduled to do, he never made another tour to include Boston, and he never came to 72 Commonwealth Avenue. He never saw Radha Gopi Vallabha in their new home, and physically. But I'm convinced that he saw the service of the devotees who were preparing for his arrival, because he knows the heart of all of his servants.
Thank you, Maharaj. We have a question from Nishkinchan Nithai Prabhu.
From who?
He has his handle.
I'm sorry?
Nishkinchan Nithai Das.
Yes. Nishkinchan Nithai.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dandavat Pranam. Maharaj, my question is, while offering different offerings at the altar, what should be our mood for the devotees who are taking darshan outside, who are participating? How we feel that connected to them also, while connecting to deities?
How does the pujari feel connected to them?
Yes, by connecting to deities. So, yeah, that is my question.
He is offering the remnants to them. He's offering the deities to the deities, offering to his spiritual master, and then he offers them the remnants of everything that has been offered to them, to everyone who is present, and they get the opportunity to take the remnants by the offering and the consciousness of the pujari who's giving them the opportunity to take the offering, whether it be water, whether it be the flower petals, the flowers that are being offered to the deity, whether it be the ghee lamp and the camphor that has been offered. Anything that's been offered is then prasadam is given to them. And we're giving an opportunity to participate in their prasadam, which is none different from them. That should be the consciousness. Any other questions?
Thank you so much, Maharaj. We have a question from Prema Pallavi Devi Dasi. Thank you, Maharaj, for the nectarine pastimes. How can I prepare myself before I go on the altar to serve the deities?
I wouldn't recommend you prepare yourself in the way that I prepared myself. I didn't have any formal way of preparing myself. I was, in fact, in those days we didn't have the mantras that we chant, which were given to us later to prepare ourselves to become conscious of the fact that we're not these bodies, that we're serving the Lord in spiritual bodies and not these physical bodies. We didn't have any of the prayers. We didn't have the prayers about to be forgiven for offenses that we pray, of course, after the offering has been made. But my consciousness before going on the altar was just that, and my preparation for that consciousness was, this is something I've been waiting millions of births to do. And I'm being given an opportunity to do it. Yes, I've been washing dishes. Yes, I've been cleaning temples. Yes, I've been painting walls. Yes, I've been doing so many other things. But now I'm coming in the presence of the Supreme Lord, and I've been asked to offer this food with love and devotion, so that they will accept it in a mood of love and devotion. And by thinking in that way before going on the altar, I felt I did the best I possibly could to prepare myself to be in the mood of awe and reverence, which I knew was to be required, to step on that altar again and again and again, and to be very, very careful. Of course, other pujaris, they may have had opportunities to become a little negligent. I didn't have that opportunity. I was only on the altar for a few weeks. But to be very, very careful of not becoming familiar with the service and forgetting who it is we are offering to. From Artik to the food, to the Boga offering, and everything else that we do, we should prepare our consciousness in this way. Anything else?
Thank you, Maharaj. We have a question from Jamuna Priya Devi Dasi. Hare Krishna, Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. How to develop the genuine love and affection for deities? Sometimes we may neglect and treat them in an impersonal way.
I'm sorry, I missed the second part. How to develop love and affection for the deities by what?
Sometimes we may neglect them and treat them in an impersonal way.
Well, I guess you've already answered your question to some degree. You won't develop your love for them by neglecting them and mistreating them in some way. How will you develop love? I try to indicate the best way it will come is by remaining steady, even if the right consciousness isn't there. It will come by being careful to not commit offenses, being careful to continue to do the service in a way that, even though we cannot be in the right consciousness, it is my service and they are expecting it of me. I will continue to do. And as Prabhupada in so many talks always emphasized, Yes, if we continue to do out of duty in due course of time, and we may think it's eternal, due course of time, it will never manifest. But if we remain steady in doing it, someday we will come to the platform where there will be some attraction for that service, and love will gradually awaken within our hearts. If it's our service, we should do it in the right consciousness, or at least do it as steadily as possible in the continuation of our service. So, yes, committing offenses, I could say don't commit offenses, but that's not an answer that's going to work. You already know you're not supposed to commit offenses, Dwight. Do you need me to tell you that? Maybe I can remind you about it. You should be conscientious not to be neglectful of your duties, of your services, not to be neglectful of their presence in the form. Yes, these are things that you can hear, but if we're not careful, we may forget. It's the nature of this material world. So, I believe, what, there's 2 minutes left before Radhanath Maharaj is supposed to speak?
Yes, Maharaj. In the interest of time, devotees kindly forgive us because we will not be able to continue this question answers any further. So, please, dear Maharaj, by your permission, should we show the altar dust now?
Should we what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
No, should we have the altar darshan now?
Yes. Yes, you should continue with whatever you're planning, because it's supposed to stop at 10 o'clock, and it's already 1 minute to 10.